You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It is back. See, I was ready. I was ready to go. We are back. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie will be back on Monday. If you want to get involved in the program, we'd love to have you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don't forget to visit our new social media platform channels. We would love to see you on Instagram or Facebook. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You just search those and then like us, follow us. We'd appreciate it. And then, then we can tell the suits, hey, look, we're very, very popular. And they'll say, okay, what does that mean to us? And I'll say, nothing. I just wanted you to know. Either way, Instagram and Facebook, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You can also download the free Civic Media app so you can listen to us wherever you go. And don't forget, if you've missed any part of any of the shows, you want to hear some of the interviews that we do, you can go to civicmedia.us or Spotify. That's going to be the easiest thing because we're cool like that. Go to Spotify, download our podcast, subscribe, then they're always right there. And maybe you're out looking for invasive species somewhere. But you say, wait a minute, Brian told me about this snodgrass or whatever it was. Let me check that out. And you listen to the podcast about it. That would be fun. If you have a real loose definition of fun. All right.
Whatever full time.
Yeah. Listen, I don't yuck anybody's yum. I don't even know what that means, but the kids say it, so I have to say it. Anyway, let's check some headlines from the Iranian war of choice that the president has launched. Anyway, here are some headlines. U.S. President Trump said he extended the ceasefire with Iran until peace talks have ended, despite his prior vow not to prolong the truce. Trump said the U.S. was waiting for a, quote, unified proposal from Iran's, quote, fractured government. I would say don't hold your breath. It doesn't appear that Iran is making any efforts to be dictated by your timetable. And also, man, I predicted this yesterday, Parker. Yesterday was Tuesday.
Yeah, you did.
And Taco Tuesday, big talk. And then we extend it indefinitely. Ceasefire indefinitely. So is that, in his mind, the end of the war? That's the question. Well, I extended the ceasefire indefinitely. Okay, what does that mean? You still have the blockade up. Anyway, also yesterday, a senior Iranian commander warned neighboring Arab countries to, quote, say goodbye to oil production in the Middle East if they allow the U.S. to resume attacking Iran from their territory. More headlines. At least two container ships were hit by gunfire in the Strait of Hormuz, according to a maritime agency following Trump's announcement. Iran's Revolutionary Guards previously said it would shut off the strait until the U.S. blockade was lifted, which we don't see any timetable for the blockade being lifted, because meanwhile, Trump said the U.S. would continue its blockade on Iranian ports, which Iran's foreign minister previously said amounted to an act of war. The president said lifting the blockade would undermine the process of a peace deal. No, that's the kind of, again, I am not a trained diplomat. I am an average, at best, negotiator. But I think if you continue to have aggressions against a company, or a country, rather, it really is detrimental to peace talks. So maybe you pull the blockade, because if you remember, and I know, put it on the tally board. How many times have I repeated this? The Strait of Hormuz was open before we bombed Iran. Everything was fine. Parker's going to his notebook. This, I think, was the 1,017th time I have mentioned that. I will mention it again because it is true and it is important. Also important, oil prices are rising today following reports of Iranian attacks on container ships near the Strait of Hormuz just hours after the president extended a ceasefire with Iran to allow more time for peace talks, which are not going to happen again because he won't lift the blockade. It's just a circular cluster of insanity that is not being taken care of, and I don't know how it will or when it will, and we all pay the price. And then more and more people die. It just keeps going. All right, well, those are the uplifting headlines from the war. Now, let's delve into a little more stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
A few more details on the ceasefire, the indefinite extension. So the president announced yesterday he's going to extend a ceasefire with Iran hours before it was due to expire, pledging to refrain from attacks until discussions with Tehran are concluded one way or the other. Trump said Iran's leadership was seriously fractured and needed to come up with a unified proposal. As far as I know, again, there's only been one consistent message coming out of Iran. There has not been, you know, the regime, then the president of Iran, then no, everybody, that's one message. So, and I, part of the other part of the problem that Iran does not want to come to the table is because Trump is doing all this diplomacy on social media, and they feel like he's trying to threaten them through social media rather than having adults sit down and have conversations. Well, he also made the announcement as talks were scheduled to take place between the U.S. and Iranian delegations in the Pakistani capital of Islamabad. Those were postponed amid uncertainty about the broad strokes of the deal. Vice President Vance and other U.S. negotiators remained in Washington instead of leaving for Islamabad as originally planned. A U.S. delegation was expected to depart yesterday for a second round of face-to-face peace talks, but Vance stayed behind to hold, quote, additional policy meetings at the White House. Iran had yet to confirm its attendance at the Islamabad talks, instead warning that it is prepared, quote, to unveil new cards on the battlefield. The ceasefire was originally set to expire today. Trump accused Iran of violating the ceasefire numerous times in posts on Truth Social early yesterday. In an interview with CNBC, he said the United States was, quote, going to end up with a great deal, end quote, from the negotiations. I think they have no choice. We've taken out their Navy. We've taken out their Air Force. We've taken out their leaders, Trump said. Just a little clarification on that. Might be true, but their Air Force, their Navy, and their Air Force and their Navy were ancient. And we gave them to Iran way back in the day. So this is an old Navy and old Air Force that we have bombed. And we didn't take it. We took out their old leadership, but they had new leadership ready to go. So we didn't really do that either. When asked whether the U.S. would resume bombing if a deal was not reached by Wednesday, the president said that he expects to, quote, be bombing because that is a better attitude to go with. He added that the military is raring to go. This does not sound like a ceasefire. I don't know. I mean, I know he's the president, so who can really stop him? But his rhetoric does nothing to help a situation. All his rhetoric does is inflame things. Iranian officials said in statements yesterday that they would not bow to U.S. pressure and said they maintained readiness in case of attacks. All right. Brian, is there any other stuff we need to know? Yes, thank you for asking. Here in Wisconsin, spending by outside groups dropped sharply in the state Supreme Court race. We've talked about this a little as the race was going on. But a new report says that spending by outside groups on Wisconsin's most recent state Supreme Court election dropped sharply from the level seen just a year ago. That's according to new analysis by Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, a group that tracks campaign spending. So the April 7th election for a seat on the state's highest court ended up with the good old-fashioned shellacking. Democratic-backed state appeals court judge Chris Taylor defeated Maria Lazar's appeals circuit court judge, Maria Lazar, set the court up for a 5-2 liberal majority once Taylor she takes the bench in August. So Taylor's 20-point victory was buoyed by a considerable fundraising advantage. Her campaign, as a reminder, raised nearly $5.6 million. Lazar's campaign only raised $900,000, but new data from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign shows that Lazar also struggled to bring in support from outside groups that have spent millions of dollars in some of the state's recent court races. For the April race, more than $1.1 million was spent by liberal or pro-Taylor groups, while less than $163,000 was spent by conservative or pro-Lazar groups. We already know the next state Supreme Court election will be next April. That's for the seat currently being held by conservative Justice Annette Ziegler, who announced last month she is not going to seek another 10-year term. Liberal Clark County Judge Lindsay Brunette has already launched her campaign for the seat. like the day after, I think on April 8th is when she announced. And I'm not being facetious on that. I think she announced right away. So there's it. Less money coming in this year, but we'll see if that changes for next year, because conservatives and Republicans will probably be a little worried that they would, if they lose, then it'd be 6-3 or 6-1 rather. 6-1. I don't know where I do my math. Some more stuff you need to know. The president's approval rating on the economy has slumped over the past month as the Iran war drives prices higher. That, according to a new AP NORC poll, with even Republicans showing less faith in his leadership. The findings from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research shows a president who is struggling with unfulfilled promises to tame inflation and testing Americans' patience with a conflict in the Middle East that has dragged on longer than expected. Trump's approval rating on the economy dropped to 30% in April, from 38 just a month before. A similarly low share of U.S. adults, 32%, approve of the president's leadership on Iran, which is unchanged since last month. The president's policies and pronouncements have often been at odds with each other. Gasoline prices, which he promised to slash, jumped after the U.S. attacked Iran in February. His tariffs have kept much of the economy in limbo. Now, only 33% of U.S. adults approve of Trump's overall job performance. That's down slightly from 38%, but still down and still very low. Trump's failing approval ratings could create problems for his party as it tries to defend House and Senate majorities in the midterm elections. The poll finds that Trump is especially weak on cost of living, and enthusiasm about Trump's performance has waned over the past year, even among his own supporters. Yes, cost of living. You know, I know they like to say that cost of living and affordability is a made-up term. It's not made up for you and I, who actually have to decide if we can afford things. We, and in a lot of cases, we cannot. And so we're looking for some. And this, it's not unusual for a president, no matter what party, to be blamed for cost of living and the economy. That's just how it goes. If people are unhappy, and that's how this president got elected, by playing. He played on a lot of different things, which are up for question all the time. But he also played on, you know, he didn't use the term affordability, but he talked about gas prices. He talked about bringing down grocery prices. He talked about all of that without using the word affordability. Then when Democrats say, well, we have an affordability problem, that's because we're highfalutin and use big words, Parker. We use multisyllabic words to describe things. We don't just go, food costs bad. We say there's an affordability crisis, which means the same thing that he campaigned on, but now it's a made-up agenda. I don't know. I don't think it is. But who am I? All right, when we come back, we're going to take a deep breath. I'm going to try to remember that I have to introduce Swiper Stay, and then we are going to play Swiper Stay. But after that, later this hour, we're going to talk to a transplant surgeon from UW Healthcare. There is an alarming number of people taking themselves off the organ donor registry. That's due to a new proposed rule by the federal government and Medicare and Medicaid. So we are going to talk all about that and what it means for people in Wisconsin who are on the organ donation waiting list and people who are considering donating their organs. So we'll talk all about that as the hour continues. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan, and this, of course, is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, I'm ready this time. I can't believe it. I get to introduce Swiper Stay. This is where we talk about pop culture, and Frank gives us some games, but he's got the rules. I don't have them. Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for introing, Brian. It's still not as good as when Jamie intros it, but it's good.
Wow. It's I cannot acceptable. Be shamed. Maybe Jamie cares about it more than I do. That could be. Maybe I'm apathetic.
Maybe Parker, I just. Can you mute his mic? I'm kidding. We
yeah,
need him.
I can, actually.
We need him for the show.
Dang.
And I want to hear his opinion on whether to swipe or stay.
Is that how this game works?
That's how this game's going to work. So I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian, you'll get to decide, or at least have a vote, of whether to stay on the story and hear more or swipe on to the next one. Parker, you're also going to get a vote today.
Oh, boy, a vote.
Then if you two knuckleheads can't decide whether to swipe or stay, I'll probably just end up staying. So here we go with story number one.
Okay.
Late wrestler admits drug use in documentary.
Oh, a late wrestler, so is dead.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm all about wrestling. I watched a little WrestleMania the other day for fun.
Did you really?
I did. It was on. I hadn't watched it WrestleMania in forever. And I saw the man, Becky Lynch, wrestle.
I don't think I've ever watched any. I'm swiping. I wonder what's going to happen.
We'll say to kill time. Okay, so I'm also not. I'm not a wrestling person either.
Not this kind.
I don't get it. It's the number one. I just don't understand it.
Yeah,
don't you understand?
But this is a very popular wrestler. The late Hulk Hogan admitted. Yes, admitted to taking life-threatening amounts of fentanyl every day to manage his pain while performing for total nonstop wrestling.
Wow.
So apparently this came after his divorce from Linda Hogan in 2009, which led Hogan to start wrestling again because he lost so much money in the divorce. He claims she took all of it.
Okay.
Hulk went on to say, I was taking 80 milligram fentanyls 2 in the morning, stuffing them under my gums here. I had 200-300 milligram patches of fentanyl on my legs, and they gave me 6 1,500 milligram fentanyl lollipops to eat.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
Brother, take your vitamins, say your prayers.
He continued, I went to the pharmacy, and they said, you should be dead. We have never seen a human being take this much fentanyl. I didn't even know.
Wow.
You don't want to hear that from a medical professional.
The ultimate man.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to watch like the actual documentary.
Yeah,
to,
do we have a name of the documentary?
How does this start?
What's do we that? Have any info on the documentary?
I don't have it pulled up right now. I was more focused on the drug use story. I know that a Hulk Hogan documentary is coming out.
Okay, I'll watch that for sure.
I didn't even know that. Wow. I think that'd be the last place I'd turn and be like, what's fentanyl going to do?
Yeah. And why is it in a lollipop? That seems dangerous and irresponsible.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right. Good start, Frank.
Thank you. We're moving on to another sports story. Mike Vrabel has officially come out and makes a statement on the controversy.
All right. I knew you were going to. I saw the headline. I didn't read the story because
I knew. You're like, it's going to be in there.
I'm like, Frank is going to continue this story with Vrabel and the reporter.
It's so good. How are you not entertained by this?
All right. I'll stay just to placate you.
Journalistic integrity.
Stay. All right. We're continuing the story. We're staying.
I knew Parker would stay.
Of course. I knew he would too.
So I'm just going to read the statement. Because that's all we have, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. He said, those are comments and questions that I've answered for the team and with the team, and we'll keep those private and to ourselves when he was talking about. He wanted to talk to the team first before he addressed anything.
Okay.
He said, I care deeply about this football team, and I'm excited to coach them. I also know that I'm going to attack each day with humility and focus. And what I can promise you is that my family, this organization, the team, the staff, the coaches, everybody, our fans, and most importantly, will get the best version of me going forward. And that's what I know. I'm excited to do that.
Yeah, but did you knock boots? That's what we want to know.
He doesn't say if they knock boots or not. He's said it was a bad look. And he's going to commit to doing things the right way in the future. Hmm. Now, Brian, if that's not a backdoor admission of guilt.
Wow.
I don't know what is.
I'm going to live a better life, which means now I just won't hold hands or gaze deeply into another woman's eyes in public.
Well, and he also said he had tough conversations with my family. What were they?
Whoa.
What did your wife say? Are you guys still together?
Yeah. Very interesting.
When's the last time you and Diana talked? I have so many questions. Just come out and say, look, at first, you were denying them big time. And now you're just apologizing for it being a bad look.
Well, and then there's the backlash because she quit her job. She was basically let go, and he still got his job, which is a nice double standard. A little slut shaming, as the kids like to say. And not that she is, But that's what it's called. There's the double standard. The woman gets fired or has to resign. But then allegations come out about her from other reporters that, you know, who knows? The whole story is very tawdry. And I
not to dismiss any double standards going on, but I do, again, there's always been a difference between journalists always hold themselves to the highest standards.
Yes. Yeah.
Let me tell you, football coaches and football players, not so much.
No standards.
None. As long as you win games, you're fine
that's
by me.
Right.
Primetime Emmy Award winner shuts down reboot chance.
Well, if it's shut down, I'm going to swipe.
Yeah, I'm swiping too.
A-list star cut from upcoming movie.
Oh, I love it when the A-listers fall off the A-list. I'll stay.
We can stay on this real quick, yeah.
It's real quick. Parker, I'm really sorry to break your heart, but Sidney Sweeney's appearance in The Devil Wears Prada 2 has been cut from the movie.
Oh, God. Oh.
I know. Sources say it was a small part, but Sweeney was supposed to cameo in the opening scene of the movie as herself. Apparently, the filmmakers decided that it just didn't fit. So we won't be seeing Sidney Sweeney.
Oh.
It's all the boys accompanying their significant others to the theater. She won't be there. That's swipe or stay.
Boo-hoo. Thank you, Frank. Always fun. We do that every morning at 7:20. After the news, we're going to talk to Dr. Nicole Neidlinger. She is an organ transplant surgeon at UW Health because there's a lot of change in this civic community.
Local voices and statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak. Jamie's on vacation. She will rejoin us on Monday. And this is, well, it's time to talk a little bit about organ donation, something we don't talk about enough. April, if you did not know, and I did not, is Donate Live Month. If you're thinking about organ donation, you want to get involved with organ donation, donatelive.net is the website. And the reason we're bringing this up is for the first time in 14 years, the annual number of deceased organ donations in the U.S. has declined. This comes at a time when currently there are 1,500 people in Wisconsin that are waiting for an organ transplant. Last month, the Versiti Blood Center of Wisconsin reported an alarming increase in the number of Wisconsinites who have removed themselves from the state organ donor registry. And all of this comes as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services proposed a new rule earlier this year for the organ donation system in the U.S. Why are people taking themselves off the registry? What's it going to mean for patients in Wisconsin? And how will these new rules affect organ donation, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country? Dr. Nicole Neidlinger joins me. She's a transplant surgeon with UW Health, as well as an associate professor in the Department of Surgery, Division of Transplantation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Doctor, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. This is a very interesting subject.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So for those who aren't familiar, let's start with the basics. How does organ donation process work in Wisconsin?
It works in Wisconsin similar to how it does in all of the states. So people can decide before the end of life what they want to have happen with their organs after they die. And that would be designating their wishes according to the donor registry. I think most people do that at the DMV because it's the interface where most people interact, but you can also make your wishes known online at donatelifewisconsin.org or heroicdeed.com. If you don't know or decide what you want to have happen with your organs after you die, it will be asked of your legal surrogates if they're in that unfortunate situation. And I think for a lot of families, they are very surprised to be in that situation. And in making decisions at that time. So I think it does help if people are able to decide before and their wishes can be honored. One of the things that I think is important to say is that we only remove organs from people after they've died. There's been some press that I think has been misleading and perhaps turned people off to organ donation that has proposed that deceased donors are giving their organs before they die. And that's not accurate. So in order to donate your organs, you do have to die in a hospital, which is sort of different from donating tissues, I guess, if you will. So
I was gonna, because can you, there is a difference because like I can donate a kidney now while I'm alive, But obviously, I can't donate one of my lungs or my heart or my pancreas or any of the, of those things. So is a kidney considered tissue then rather than an organ?
So you can donate a single kidney or a part of your liver, like parts that would not result in your death. Yes, when you're living. But for deceased organ donation, you have to have died to donate sort of the vital organs that you can't live without. And you know, donate both kidneys, both lungs, heart, liver, pancreas, intestine.
Is that why we're seeing the decrease in people taking themselves off the registry? Because it doesn't, most people, you would, common sense, you would think, well, they'd know you can't donate your organs while you're alive.
I think there's been some articles in the press and media which have suggested that organ donation is something other than generous and altruistic, which I think is probably unfair to a lot of the families and donors who have given this amazing gift. There's some stories in the media where I think have not painted the entire picture accurately. And there's some fear that comes along with that. So people hear these stories and they become worried. I often hear people say things like, oh, if I sign up to be a donor, people won't try to save me in the hospital, or they feel like somehow not everything will be done for them. And that's not accurate. So in the hospital, everybody's efforts are in saving someone's life before we would even consider organ donation. So those types of stories, I think.
Now, just to clear that up, because that obviously is not right. The doctors are going to try to save you. They're going to do their best. Do you even, if I were to come into an emergency room and I had trauma, do the doctors even know that I'm an organ donor when they start working on me? Does that even come into effect? Just to clear up people's minds and get rid of that worry, they're working on me to save me right in the moment, correct?
Right. They would not know. So what would happen is if the doctors working on you would not know, the health team there. And then if it became to the point that either you had died in the hospital or you were, close to dying, they would refer as a potential organ donor only after all efforts have been exhausted to save your life. And then the donor network would be able to access the registry and find out if you had made your wishes known. But that's not even activated until all efforts
have been exhausted. You have to be pronounced dead at the hospital or dead wherever before anything progress.
Before your organs are taken out, yes.
Yes, of course. All right. Well, can you quickly, before I want to get into Donate Live Month and all the, and how people can get involved in all that, but I do wonder about this new rule that's been proposed by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. Could you explain that and how it might affect the current organ donation system?
Well, I think, Medicare and Medicaid is, under Secretary Kennedy, there was a recent announcement that they did where they talked about just doing some modernization and reform to the whole system. So to modernizing the IT structure, which I think there's a lot of aspects of that which are overdue and needed, and modernizing how the system that oversees organ donation. But in general, and I think that happened in that hearing as well, like Secretary Kennedy mentioned, he had a family member who was an organ donor. I think part of the effort is to restore public trust, which is a big, important aspect of keeping organ donation the altruistic, generous thing that I think it is. We have so many families who, on their worst day, consider others and say, my person hadn't made their wishes known, but this is aligned with who they are and their wishes, and we want to save another person. So I think getting public trust back, I know, is a priority of the current, CMS and HRSA administration. And of course, we applaud that. Our whole industry relies on public trust and organ donation.
It's amazing to me, as I'm an organ donor, because I figure once I'm dead, I got parts. If somebody can use them, I don't know how much I've beaten them up, but if somebody can use them, good for them. I think that should be a lot of people's mentality. What do you hear from people who are hesitant? And we can get into Donate Live Month too. People who are hesitant to make that, past what you said before about believing some of the misinformation about, harvesting organs while you're still alive and all that hogwash. When people are just, for some reason, they're hesitant. They're like, I don't know. What would you tell somebody to encourage them that maybe this is the right choice for you, or it is definitely the right choice for you?
I mean, I think one, in terms of like the compelling reasons, as you mentioned, you know, there's 1,500 people in Wisconsin who, for them, they have no other option. I mean, if you have end-stage liver disease, end-stage heart disease, there's no other option besides a transplant. So I think doing something generous for another person is a compelling reason. But in terms of the myths that people say, a lot of times I hear people say, almost like what you were just saying, like, oh, I think I'm too old or too sick, or my organs aren't, you know, any good. And I, you know, the pool of people we're considering as donors has really expanded. There was a donor recently who was 100 years old. So
I think
age doesn't rule people out. We've had, I mean, it's really tragic, but even newborn infants have been organ donors if something happens to them at birth. I think people can be donors even if they have diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, hepatitis even. There's just a lot of expansion of the donor pool because it's the only option for the people on the wait list who have organ failure. So I think that's probably one that I hear often about people think they're too old or too sick.
But even if one organ gives out and that's your cause of death, your other organs were probably still working. So give that a yeah. Dr. Nicole Neidlinger is my guest. She's a transplant surgeon with UW Health. She's also an associate professor in the Department of Surgery Division of Transplantation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. All right, so I mentioned that April is Donate Live month. You can go to donatelive.net. You can also go to donatelivewisconsin.org. What is Donate Live month? What's the purpose and what are we hoping that people will understand or learn from this awareness month?
I mean, I think it's really important, again, like bringing it back to public trust, to educate the public about and sort of rectify the myths and misconceptions that are out there, especially in the face of some of the negative media stories, and remind people that donating their organs is an amazing thing to do. People often say things to me like, you know, it allowed my person to have a legacy. And for our family, it was, you know, the only time we felt like we had to make a decision in this really tragic thing that happened to us. I think the reason for Donate Life Month is to sort of celebrate the people and the families who do this amazing work and offer, you know, help for others in their worst day. So I think I personally want to say thank you to all the families who may be listening, who've lost their loved one, who donated their organs.
That is the ultimate gift. And you've mentioned it several times, being altruistic and caring about other people, but it is really the ultimate gift. And even if you're narcissistic, you get to think that a piece of you will carry on long after you're gone. So even if you're not the most altruistic person, you could still do this and feel good about yourself for whatever reason you have. Is there, we mentioned the 1,500 people in Wisconsin that are on the transplant list. Are there average wait times? Are some of these people, because once, through my life, I've heard people are on the wait list for years and years waiting for an organ. And do the organs, again, this is a basic question that people who are considering organ donation might not know, but the organ can come from anywhere. It doesn't have to come from Wisconsin. If you're on the Wisconsin list, you can get an organ from anywhere, right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so the wait list across the nation, I'd say about 80% of the folks are waiting on a kidney, because there's a lot of people with end-stage kidney disease in the United States, and many of them are on dialysis. You're right that the wait times are extensive. So it's depending on people's blood type, they're usually waiting at least a year, sometimes 5 years for kidneys. And a lot of them die waiting. Unfortunately, they just get too sick to even continue on dialysis. For these folks, it's really their only option. And organ donation is the way to get them off dialysis and return them to sort of working normal life. And
it's tough. Now, I mentioned donatelivewisconsin.org and donatelive.net, which is for Donate Live Month. Where can people register? If listening to you today, doctor, they said, you know what, it's not on my driver's license, I should do this, I feel like I want to do this, how can people get on the registry to donate their organs?
They can do it at the DMV, but of course nobody loves, like,
no, nobody wants
there.
To go to the
exactly. Nobody wants to go unless it's there.
That's like donating an organ in real time. I don't want to go to the DMV.
It's not the best. So a much easier way to do it would be to make your wishes known online. So one of the websites that I think we endorse is heroicdeed.com. There's also Donate Life Wisconsin. That would be .org. So both of those would be ways to do that.
Terrific. Well, thank you for the information, Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, a transplant surgeon with UW Health. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing the information. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Be back with more. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Glad you're here on Daybreak. Yes, I say that a lot, and I do mean it a lot. So we're glad you're here. If you want to get involved, of course, 855-75-CIVIC is the number. Phone, text. I don't know how that technology works. You can do either one from that number. But do it, 855-752-4842. I don't know if you were watching Capitol Hill yesterday, but Donald Trump's Federal Reserve Chair nominee Kevin Warsh testified before Congress amid the Powell probe, the Powell probe, because, you know, the president has been at odds with Jerome Powell, the current head of the Fed. He doesn't like him because he won't lower interest rates. He doesn't do what the president says. And so he wants somebody new in there because his term is up in August, even though, just a reminder, in case you forgot, Jerome Powell was appointed by Donald Trump. So, you know, like a lot of people in the Donald Trump universe, he likes you till he doesn't like you. And now we're in the phase where he does not like Jerome Powell. But yesterday, his selection for the chair of the Federal Reserve, Kevin Warsh, testified in a Senate confirmation hearing as his nomination faces bipartisan opposition. And man, it got dicey. The opposition centers on a federal criminal investigation into the central bank's current leader. The probe into Fed Chair Jerome Powell focuses on alleged false testimony to Congress about an office renovation, and that threatens to derail or delay Warsh's nomination. You remember when Powell publicly, on camera, went against what Donald Trump said about the cost and corrected him in front of everybody. And that seemed to be the beginning of the end for Jerome Powell, that and the fact that he will not just lower interest rates willy-nilly. Anyway, Warsh voiced support for the independence of the Fed and its role setting interest rates. He used the term monetary policy to describe the central bank's task of adjusting benchmark borrowing costs. His quote, "Monetary policy independence is essential. Monetary policymakers must act in the nation's interest." He is a former Fed official, by the way, this Kevin Warsh. So he defended the right of public officials, including presidents, to voice their views on interest rate policy, saying such comments do not infringe on Fed independence. Sure, unless you are, as was mentioned not only by Elizabeth Warren, but John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana, unless you are a human sock puppet, which is how Warsh was described a couple of times. He said he welcomes collaboration with the White House and Congress on non-monetary matters that are part of the Fed's remit, such as banking regulation. Well, then, Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, she's a top Democrat on the committee. She responded directly to Warsh's defense of a president's right to criticize the Fed, saying the federal investigation of Powell accounts to a pressure campaign that extends beyond public criticism of Fed policies. Her quote, "You said it perfectly fine for the elected officials to state their views on interest rates, but that's not what Donald Trump is doing." Warsh may become a sock puppet atop the Fed, Warren said. Later in the hearing, he was asked by John Kennedy from Louisiana if he was going to be a sock puppet for the president, and he said, absolutely not. We'll see. We'll see if that's the case. He also, there was one of the most condescending comments from Elizabeth Warren. Warsh was answering some question, and he didn't answer the question. He went round and round about it, and She just said it in the most dismissive ways, adorable, and then moved on. I was like, oh, wow, you just got pwned by Elizabeth Warren in front of a congressional committee. When asked by John Kennedy if he would be a sock puppet, he said, I'm honored the president nominated me for the position, and I'll be an independent actor if confirmed as chairman of the Federal Reserve. Raise your hand if you believe that statement. Okay, nobody here raising their hand. Are you raising your hand where you are? I don't think so. We know that the president likes to replace people with people who are more adaptive to his whims. Even though he appointed, again, Jerome Powell, now Jerome Powell is saying, listen, the Fed is supposed to be an independent agency. You don't run the Fed. Well, now he's got to go. He's staying till his term is up. He's under investigation. I'm sure once his term is up, the investigation will go away because there'll be no more reason to go after him. But now Donald Trump is handpicking somebody who is going to, for better or worse, do exactly what he says. So we'll see how this plays out. It is, I think, these committees, now they push Mark Wayne Mullen through very fast, but I think they're starting to wise up where at least there's some debate over some of these potential appointees rather than just rubber stamping everybody and letting them go through. But we'll have to see how it goes. Quickly, before we go to the news, I want to remind you that you can keep up with the show all the time. How, Brian? Well, you can download the free Civic Media app. That means you can listen not only to this show whenever you want, but you can listen to all the other great things on Civic Media. Maybe you want, after you've been bombarded with news and information and hilarity all morning, you think to yourself, I need some top 40 hits. I need some country music. I need something else. Use the free Civic Media app. Now, you want to listen to something we did. Maybe you missed our really informative interview on organ donations, and you want to go and listen to that again. Well, listen to the podcast. Go to Spotify. All the cool kids podcasts are on Spotify. Go to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You can subscribe and you can hear all our stuff. And while you're there, maybe check out Crafty Brewers, Tales Behind Craft Beer. Subscribe to both. Listen to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie first. You want to talk about beer, you can do that too. Listen to Crafty Brewers. There's a plug for me. But you can also go on Facebook and Instagram, search Daybreak with Brian and Jamie, and subscribe to our social channels. We got a lot going on. We are very, very accessible, and we're glad you're here, so we want you to come along with us on all those adventures. When we come back, it'll be time for headlines, stuff you need to know, and a whole lot more if you're listening on WMDX. We'll talk to you tomorrow, or jump over to the app or the Facebook or YouTube stream. It is
the national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.